Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening our good friend, Bill Sardi, who supports our program and really has been a tremendous help to me through the years. And we're going to be talking this evening about the treatment of cholesterol, the treatment of hypertension. I would just point out that as of the 9th of June, that was just last Wednesday, why the FDA put out an advisory to doctors across the country about a statin drug called Crestor, a potent cholesterol-fighting drug. Now, these drugs come on the market. They're aggressively marketed, and, oh, this is the wonderful thing. We're gonna save people's lives by putting them on the statin drugs and getting their cholesterol down. Now, when I practiced medicine for many years, why, the normal cholesterol was 230. But, of course, most people didn't were not above 230, and so there was very little demand for the cholesterol drug. So the drug companies went to a great deal of effort to convince doctors you had to get the cholesterol down less than 200, or maybe less than 180, or maybe even to 160. Oh, you've got to get the cholesterol down. You're going to save people's lives, because that's what we're here for, to create drugs that will save people's lives. But what the FDA advisory said was that actually they found that a certain number of people, especially young people who were taking this drug, were developing rhabdomyolysis, which means basically the destruction of the muscles, rhabdomyolysis, and it was actually killing them. The Public Citizens Group, Ralph Nader's group, had been complaining for a long period of time about the danger of these drugs, and the FDA, of course, goes right ahead and insists that they be released. If you die of the drug, well, that's your problem. Try and sue the drug companies with the FDA approval. You must understand that the people who work in the FDA, many of them, when they leave the FDA, go to work for the very drug companies they've been regulating. This is the way things work. I wish it weren't that way, but unfortunately, we find that many times with FDA. We find it within the CDC and the NIH. These organizations, which are supposedly there to protect our health, well, many of the people in them have a vested interest of going along with the flow. Because if you object to these drugs coming on the market, or vaccines, or why you want to go ahead and talk about the dangers of vaccines and thimerosal in them, you're never going to get a job working for a vaccine manufacturer, and you're certainly not going to get any grants for vaccine research. And if the drug companies cut off your research grants, why, you're not going to be able to continue in academic medicine, because it's a publish or perish situation. And that's a pretty sad commentary on the status of medicine today. But this is the reality. They've upped the cost of these drugs. They're doing everything they can to keep people from buying their drugs in Canada, saying, oh, we can't have you buying those drugs in Canada. They might be harmful to you. And yet they're the same drugs they sell in the United States. And they use this basic recurrent theme, oh, we're from the government, we're here to protect you, and that's why we've made it illegal for you to buy your drugs at half cost in Canada, because those drugs might be harmful. Well, I'd like to suggest that many of these drugs are harmful. They're just as harmful when they're sold here in the United States as when they're sold in Canada. And with that thought, Bill, why don't you take over?
Well, certainly the statin drugs, which they're trying to get every American adult on, Crestor is just the leading one. It's the newest one. It's supposed to be the most potent. And, of course, Ralph Nader's group, Public Citizen, been warning about this for quite a while, and confronted with the data, now the FDA has had to step in and say, please, please, doctors, start people on the lowest dose, not the 40-milligram dose, but the 10-milligram dose. They're not telling you that when you go down to the 10 milligram dose, there's no benefit. There's no health benefit. They had to go to the 40 milligrams because that's when they could lower the cholesterol so far that then the mortality rate started to drop. Now you go back down to 10 milligrams, there's no reduced risk in mortality. You're not preventing heart attacks. You're not preventing mortal events in the body. So now you're taking a drug which only is at risk for side effects only. This drug depletes the body of coenzyme Q10, a very important antioxidant in the liver, which then makes it possible for muscle tissue to break down. And now the FDA warning people that if you have muscle pain or weakness when taking these statin drugs, you need to advise your doctor. If you have kidney problems, liver problems, and other things before you start on these drugs, you really need to be very careful. And, of course, you can get the mortal rhabdomyolysis, which is the breakdown of muscle tissue, clogs the kidneys and the bloodstream, and you die immediately. So patients are not being warned, and now the FDA says, doctors, you must tell the patients that they are at risk for these side effects. Again, the FDA not stepping in and telling you, you have no benefit taking 10 milligrams of Crestor. There is no health benefit. You will not lower your cholesterol far enough to reduce mortality rates. That's what that drug was all about. It's not going to be beneficial to you now if they're going to start you out on these lower doses like this. If they start you out on the higher doses, now you have the high risk of side effects and the rhabdomyolysis. So there is concern. The FDA was pressured into this after denying this and denying this and finally bent to the rules here. So, but the parts they didn't fill in now, as we've said, is that you have no health benefit at the low dose, which is where they're going to start you. So be aware if you're taking these drugs, if you're pressured to start these drugs, and the doctor says, well, I'm going to give you just a 10-milligram dose, you're going to have no health benefit. The risk of side effects is lower, but you have no health benefit. And, of course, you're still going to be depleting your body of coenzyme Q10. You'll still be at risk for the muscle wasting. So it's a grave concern for everyone. Of course, tonight I wanted to speak a little bit about hypertension. A lot of people that take statin cholesterol-lowering drugs have high blood pressure, so they put them on cholesterol-lowering drugs. I have a report going to be up on my website very soon that will explain all this to you so you can read it, analyze it, check the references for yourself. It's a shocking report, more shocking than I had dreamt. Millions of Americans with hypertension. The studies show 9 out of 10 Americans in their lifetime are going to be diagnosed with hypertension. But do you really have high blood pressure? Do you really have high blood pressure? Data in my report shows that they're really fudging the data. Now they're showing that 120 over 80 is pre-hypertension. And that number, which we all thought was normal, they're now telling us it isn't normal. But UCLA did a wonderful study and showed us that they need to have age-adjusted figures. When we get a little older, we can tolerate higher blood pressures, and of course that will make it so that most people that are told to take blood pressure-lowering drugs don't really need to. And so if you're in, you've been told maybe 140 over 90 is the point when they need to start the antihypertensive medicines, well, if you're over age 55, those numbers might be 148 for men and 158 for the first number for females. If you're over 65, that would be as high as 159 for men and 167 for females. You can have cholesterol, the first number, that systolic number, it can be that high without having an increased risk of stroke or heart attack. It's just an age-adjusted figure. You're fine for your age. And
you know, Bill, it always used to be that the doctor said 100 plus your age. So at 60, why would it be 160? At 70, it would be 170. But suddenly the drug companies have got all that changed. And I know when I went to my internist, he said, we've got to get you down to 120. Well, systolic. Now, I've been running 150 for 50 years that I know of. And the last thing I want to do is lower my blood pressure significantly, which I would think would make me much more prone to have a stroke or something else, or problems as far as my visual acuity, things like that. And yet, of course, this is what doctors are told by the drug companies and by certain people working at the major universities who get grants from the drug companies. We've got to get your pressure down to 120. That is normal for a man 75 years of age. And I don't believe that for one minute. I don't believe we were wrong all those years, and suddenly they're right now, because if you look at the statistics and read them very carefully, the benefits that come with actually taking these medications, the one they wanted to put me on, and it was over a four-year period, and why 12 people would die if you didn't take the medicine, but if you did take the medicine, 10 would die. You know, and this was out of 4,000 or something like that. It didn't seem like a very good percentage to me. It was about maybe 2% difference, you know, over a period of a number of years. The 2% improvement in your statistics by taking a medicine that was going to alter your entire physiology and lower your blood pressure dramatically, far lower than it had ever been before.
Well, if all the people taking blood pressure lowering medications, out of 11 people that take it, one will get a benefit, that is, prevent a heart attack or stroke that could be mortal. So the rest of you will be taking it without any real big health benefit. So the pressure numbers will come down, that's true. It may be misleading to you, you say your pressure numbers are lower, but many people have a stroke with normal blood pressure, and this is the thing that fools a lot of people. And of course, one of the shocking things of my report when we wrote this up on hypertension is that apparently most of the doctors in the United States don't even take your blood pressure properly. And of course what this comes out to is that you need to have your arm horizontal in front of you at about heart height. That is, your arm comes down just slightly in front of you, and that they take your pressure that way. Now if you have let's say a blood pressure of 158 is your first number, the systolic number. Well, that number, if you hang your arm to your side, you'll now have a pressure of 185. All of a sudden, they think you have super high blood pressure. They have to put you on medicine immediately. You didn't even need it. It's just that they took the blood pressure wrong. And, of course, I have to give you the references for all this. You really need to go back to your doctors and make sure. It says now that the doctors are to note in the charts when they write your blood pressure up as to which position of the arm they used, because it may artificially inflate the figures. And in fact, this may be a very flawed way of all of the years we've judged the blood pressure lowering drugs to be effective using a test that doesn't work so well. And by the way, one of the things they're doing in the hospital is removing those wonderful, you might call them old-fashioned mercury sphygmomanometers. That's a blood pressure-lowering monitor. And it's a little mercury in a column of glass. And, of course, it's sealed in there. You can't get out. But it's not toxic. But at any rate, the environmentalists want that mercury moved out of the hospitals. All the other what we call aneroid or digital ways of measuring blood pressure need to be calibrated from time to time. They get out of calibration, and then the numbers may be flawed, whereas the one that's in mercury is never out of calibration. The very definition of blood pressure is the displacement of mercury in a glass column. So many of you can go out and buy and purchase your own mercury blood pressure monitoring device for about $50. You can find it online. We'll have advice for you soon at my website on how to do this, but one of the very interesting things also is that so many people have an artificially high blood pressure in the doctor's office, but not at home. And this is called white coat hypertension. That is, when the doctor's white coat is seen, it seems to trigger an unconscious anxiety, stress reaction, and your blood pressure goes up. It's now been shown that if nurses take the blood pressure, it's far lower, and even better, and it's in the news today, as the very day we're speaking, that it would be better to take your blood pressure at home. So if you're in the high blood pressure category, if you're worried about this, if they've got you on the medicines, please, by all means, check your blood pressure at home and see what your numbers really are there. You may not need even to take these blood pressure pills. Some very sharp British doctors said, you know, we don't think a lot of our patients need to take these pills. So since the blood pressure, most people have mild blood pressure, not severe, they took their mild blood pressure patients and just withdrew the drugs carte blanche, just withdrew them. And 22% of those patients never needed to go back to their medications. They didn't need them at all. You see, at times we may have been under stress or something earlier and needed, it looked like we needed to be on those drugs, but who knows, maybe even the blood pressure was measured wrong. At any rate, many, many millions of people are on blood pressure drugs because they measured your pressure wrong, because of the white coat reaction, you need to do it at home, and of course they're using the wrong numbers. They're not age-adjusting the numbers. You can have a little bit higher numbers as you get older without having an increased risk of stroke or heart attack. So this will all be in my report at my website, askbillsardi.com. It's not online yet, but it will be shortly as soon as we get it all designed and fine-tuned up there.
And one of the things, of course, if you take a blood pressure laying down, it's usually higher than it is when the patient is sitting. And, of course, they're emphasizing treatment for systolic blood pressure. In years past, it was the diastolic pressure. It was the lower one you worried. And that got
well, now here's another embarrassment. Absolutely. For years and years and years, listen, your audience, I guess if we ask them the quiz, which number is more important, the first number or the second number? Well, for years they told us it was, of course, Dr. Stan, the
diastolic, right, the second number.
Now, all of a sudden, they tell us, oops, we made a mistake. I've never seen so many mistakes in the care of one kind of a health problem as this one. And, of course, now they realize it's the first number that counts. So all these years, they made us phobic about the wrong number. Now they admit that's wrong. For quite a few years, they gave us calcium-blocking drugs that was increasing the risk of a heart attack by 60%, and then they quietly withdrew those drugs and gave us what they call slow-acting calcium-blocking drugs, because they were actually killing people. They actually never disclosed how many people died prematurely on those drugs, so they still prescribed them. They're slow-acting. They still increase the risk of sudden death, and about a third of the people on calcium-blocking drugs for hypertension are on antidepressants, and many of these people commit suicide due to the side effects of the drug. So these are serious things. There are four classes of antihypertensive drugs. None of them are safe to use. All of them cause nutritional side effects, which then induces blood pressure itself. The diuretics and the beta blockers raise your blood sugar. Blood sugar then raises your blood pressure. So it's a self-fulfilling drug that by the very side effects it gives, it raises your blood pressure, and then you forever need the drug to control it. So the only medication that's given that addresses a nutritional root of your problem, every form of blood pressure is caused by a nutritional problem, either blood sugar, not enough magnesium and potassium in your diet, too much salt, these are all nutritional problems and so on. But the only one that addresses this are the diuretics, or the water pills, which then get you to lose the salt and the water and your pressure comes down, but they also wash out your potassium and your magnesium. They then give you potassium-sparing diuretics that keep the potassium there so you won't lose it. Then the potassium overloads in your kidneys, and you are up for a mortal side effect. You may succumb to this, and then they blame it all on the potassium supplement that you were given rather than the drug itself. This is so terrible to even think about. And, of course, this is just kind of what goes on, and they never replace the magnesium. Without proper magnesium, your heart can spasm. It's a natural calcium blocker, natural muscle relaxant, and therefore your heart will go into spasm. And then you're not on the rolls anymore. They're not taking your hypertension. You've passed away. You don't belong, and so you don't become a statistic they can track, so it's not easy for them to see what actually happened on these drugs.
Okay, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a few moments with Bill Sardi. If you'd like to take him a call, our telephone number is, of course, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I suggest you go to Bill's website at askbillsardi.com. When will the website be up there? The article be up on your website?
The report should be there by the end of the week. My people are working on it furiously. It has a lot of graphics on it, so it should be there in a day or two.
The references to this report from UCLA, where they actually analyzed, and they said that we needed age-adjusted systolic blood pressure analysis.
Exactly. All the references are there.
Okay, we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Bill Sardian. Bill, of course, is a health journalist. He spends a great deal of time researching various medical reports, and certainly there are good things in the medical literature, but you have to search for them many, many times. I mean, the one thing you do not want is to go by any study that is financed by a drug company or an article written by somebody who works for a drug company or gets grants from a drug company, because they have a vested interest in giving you the information the drug company wants. And believe me, we're talking about a multi-billion dollar industry. What we need to do is get back to sound science and people who are reporting really what they find rather than what they are paid or encouraged to find. And I know, having been in an academic atmosphere, that when the drug company gives $100,000 to a clinic to test their drug, they expect to get a positive benefit from it. And if you don't give them a positive benefit, you never get another grant from the drug company. That's how the game is played. And that's why I wasn't too anxious to stay in academic medicine. Well, pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, and certainly in the literature, Science Magazine this week, and of course others last week, showing that many of the studies that we read in the medical journals are now flawed. We don't really recognize the bad science. The peer review is not capturing a lot of the false information. There was just a big report here last week showing that vitamin C supplements over and above the recommended daily allowance may make arthritis worse. If you can imagine this, we're all taking these vitamin C supplements. Somehow, very firmly, this researcher came out with this report. Of course, it was an animal study, and I confronted this researcher online and said, wait a minute, there's a human study that was done over many years with thousands of patients, which showed that there was a 300% reduced risk of arthritis of the knee when you took a large high-dose vitamin C supplement. How in the world does your animal study, how are you so confident about that when we have a human study that shows the exact opposite? And, of course, she said in her answer was, yeah, I wondered about that. What do you mean you wondered about it? See, peer review in journals is supposed to capture that and confront these authors and make sure they include that in their references in the article. No mention was made that vitamin C in humans, not animals. By the way, the animals make their own vitamin C, thousands and thousands of milligrams a day. Every animal except a guinea pig and a fruit bat and a few of the monkeys. So,
and how about human beings? Humans
don't, and of course, but the animals do and make thousands of milligrams. A billy goat, which is about the same weight and size of a human, 160 pounds, will make 13,000 milligrams of vitamin C a day and has no increased risk of arthritis. So, again, the scientists are wrong with this. They have something flawed in their research study there when they did this study with the animals and their knees and trying to figure out why, because it doesn't occur in nature. The animals make their, they did this in guinea pigs, of course, that don't make their own vitamin C, but it's just not borne out by the data that we have available to us. So, again, we're being frightened away from the dietary supplements. Probably the greatest thing we can do to stay healthy with advancing age is to take some dietary supplements if we are knowledgeable how to do that. Just in hypertension alone, if we would learn just some little tips on how to control our hypertension. If you walk every day, you'll lower 2 or 3 points. A low-sodium diet, you lower your pressure by 4 to 9 points.
Hold that thought for just a minute, Bill. We've got to bring our stations on. Well, Bill Sardi was commenting on the things that you can do to help your blood pressure. If you have hypertension, why, certainly one of the things that will help you is to get walking every day. And you walk every day, and that'll knock your pressure down a few points. And then if you restrict your sodium intake, why, that'll knock down your hypertension a few points. And pick up the story from there, Bill.
Of course, watch your consumption of alcohol. That's 3 or 4 points. They're showing other ways to do this. Welch's Grape Juice Company showed if you drank a good glass of their Welch's Grape Juice every day, you'd knock the pressure down 9 or 10 points. There was another wonderful little study showing a dramatic effect, as much as 20 points, just drinking hibiscus tea every day, if you can imagine this. There are some simple things that you can do to control your blood pressure. The point is, most people on blood pressure-lowering drugs have what we call mild or moderate hypertension. They only need a few point reduction, and they don't need to be on these medications. So if you were just learning two or three of these little things, a couple of points here and a couple of points there, and the next thing, you don't have high blood pressure that's anywhere near the need of medication. And, of course, with all the costs and side effects involved, we'd love to steer you away from that. Certainly, I can't tell you to just drop those medications in the trash can and stop taking them. That's just something you're going to have to monitor out on your own with your doctor. I can't play doctor with you here on the radio. But I can tell you that the medical literature convincingly says that the care of hypertension is in a state of chaos. It doesn't work. Most of the people that have hypertension, the doctors say, well, you're not going to stick on a diet, so I'm going to have to put you on the medicines. But that's under the assumption the medicines are going to work. No better than one out of five patients on the antihypertensive medicines are staying on them due to the side effects. Half of them give up. The ones who stay on, only one out of five, are under control. The drugs are not working. It doesn't matter which drug it is. Only one out of five. And there's some alarming studies here. I mean, just hundreds of thousands of people. They did a study in Europe where 700,000 people every day show up in the doctor's offices in Germany that are taking hypertensive drugs, and out of the 700,000, only 132,000 are under control. One out of seven. In France, they did a study with 4,714 men, and 85% of them on the drugs for blood pressure were out of control. Their numbers were wrong. And so what happens is, with only 15% of the people benefiting and only the risk of side effect, this is a state of chaos. Their therapy does not work. Patients don't like it. Half of them abandon it. And when they do take it, it's not bringing the numbers down properly anyway. So modern medicine needs to be confronted with their own numbers. That's where I got this data. You need to be aware of the major side effects of these, and you need to understand that there are some alternatives for you. Dietary supplements, some dietary health habits, things you can do. One of the almost comical studies was done with stockbrokers who are kind of high-pressured guys, and they tend to have high blood pressure. And they took and asked these stockbrokers if they were willing to go out get a pet dog or a pet cat. And by adding a pet to their home, it lowered their blood pressure better than the ACE inhibitor drugs, which is one of the primary drugs used for hypertension. So I think stress, anxiety, these kind of things, they play a role in this hypertension issue. Certainly alcohol does. If you're goofing around some night and you have too much to drink, you're going to destroy the magnesium in your body, and the magnesium's needed. Now your blood vessels spasm. Circulation to the brain is cut off temporarily. You have what we call vasospasm, and then you have a stroke. You know, you need a lot of magnesium in your system, so you never have that happen. And remember, alcohol in moderation so that you avoid this totally. But everyone is not told, lots of magnesium, and it'll make up for your sins if you're having lots of alcohol consumption. Now, the one profound conundrum, the one paradox of this whole thing is, it seems to be that you can drink red wine and you don't have the risk of stroke, you don't have the risk of hypertension. We're going to get into that in a few minutes as to why wine is an exception, red wine in particular, in the risk of hypertension. But there are so many wonderful ways that you can learn how to control your blood pressure. And the first thing to ask is, do you have high blood pressure at all? Make sure they measured it right. Make sure that your numbers are age-adjusted. If you're age 55, your numbers can be as high as 148 for the first number for men, 158 for females, and, of course, it could be as much over 65, 159 for men and 167 for females. By the way, all this is in the archives of internal medicine. It's all been reported, so I'm not giving you any faulty numbers here or anything like this. It's all studies done at UCLA, so that you can check it out for yourself.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two with Bill Sardi. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Remember Bill's website. It's AskBillSardi, SARDI.com. Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Bill Sardi, and we're just talking about hypertension and, of course, all the problems with the treatment of hypertension. And, of course, the important thing is, are you really hypertensive? Well, there are many internists now who have accepted the drug company's definition of hypertension, and it doesn't matter if you're 70 years old or 80 years old. Your blood pressure is supposed to be 120 or you're going to die. Well, we're all going to die sooner or later. But are there potential complications taking the blood pressure medications? You can bet your life there are. And so you have to weigh the benefit to the risk ratio. And so the important thing to realize is that, you know, if you don't adjust the systolic blood pressure for age, why an awful lot of people are going to be considered hypertension. They're going to have to buy the expensive drugs. And, of course, the FDA will not let you buy those in Canada. You go up there, you become a lawbreaker, breaking a federal law, because you're going to buy the same drug in Canada at half the price or a third the price. You can buy it here in the United States. Who do you think the FDA is really looking after? Do you think they're really looking after you? Or are we subsidizing the drug companies? And their profits, I will tell you, are going up faster than almost any other industry in the United States today. So pick up the story there, Bill.
Well, certainly the blood pressure-lowering drugs is a $16 billion business a year. Billion with a B. All of the dietary supplements sold in the United States are only $14 billion. Here's just one class of drugs, $16 billion. Now, you can replace many of the actions of these drugs. The wonderful scientists in India showed that people on ACE inhibitor drugs for lowering their blood pressure, if they just ate two bananas a day, which provides plenty of potassium and some other little wonderful natural molecules,
Go ahead.
It was a lot better than taking the ACE inhibitor drugs. And, of course, you can break now because that made its impact right there, just two bananas a day.
Okay, no, we've got about a minute, so go ahead.
Okay, so, you know, these are the advantages that we need to learn about. Bananas, potatoes, cantaloupe, spinach, dried apricots, beans, they all contain lots of potassium. If you get plenty of potassium, you simply may not need these drugs. And, of course, what if your first blood pressure number is really high and your second one's normal? Dr. Stephen Seeley in Britain shows our arteries are hardening due to calcium, too much calcium, and then that causes the aorta to stiffen. Our first blood pressure number goes up because the heart has to pump harder, because the aorta is stiff. That's the first blood pressure outside the heart. And so our first number is higher. How do you reverse that problem? You can, of course, magnesium. It's a natural calcium blocker, so your arteries aren't as stiff. Fish oil tends to make your arteries less stiff. Okay. And, of course, you
hold
can reverse
those. Hold that thought right there, Bill.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, he's been talking about some of the things that we can do that will tend to help us with our blood pressure, things like fish oil, magnesium, certainly eating bananas. You can eat a couple of bananas a day and increase your potassium quite well. It's in many ways, your body then has the ability to handle that, to determine how much potassium you need. So, and you need a proper amount of potassium and proper amount of magnesium in your system. In fact, many times you will get cardiac irritability because of low magnesium. Well, right now we've got on the line. Do you want to make any other points there before we go to our people calling from across America?
Well, no, none other than that the drugs lower your blood pressure whether you need it or not. You can have too low a blood pressure. Magnesium and potassium excretes the excess and will lower your blood pressure just to the point where it's normal. It normalizes it, so it can't make your blood pressure go too low. And, of course, that's something you need to know.
All right, we've got Melanie calling from New York State. Hi, Melanie. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
I'm enjoying your program. I catch it every now and then.
All right, fine. How are you listening to us?
On WJIV.
Okay, very good. Up there, is that in Albany or Utica?
Utica.
Okay, fine. Go ahead.
I was just wondering if you had done anything or read anything on this study. They're doing it. I think it's University of California, San Diego. About the mental effects of the statin drugs.
Do you know anything at all about the mental effects of the statin drugs there, Bill?
Yes, well, of course, if you drive your cholesterol too low, now understand, fats are needed in the diet. What do you think we crave them for? And that makes our cholesterol, and we actually feel better. And the reason why we feel better is because that makes hormones. We need those fats and oils to make hormones. Now, if they drive your cholesterol below 160, you're going to slip into mental depression and increase your risk for cancer. So one of the very, very severe problems is lowering your cholesterol number too far down. And I talk to a lot of people, they're very proud, they have a cholesterol number of 120, 140, and I'm trying to warn them, they're at risk, they're at risk, they've driven that number far too low to maintain health. Cholesterol is needed naturally in the bloodstream to carry antioxidants like vitamin E and so on to your tissues, so you won't get cancer, so you won't become mentally depressed and so on. So it's very important.
And my mother had a major personality change and went into like a dementia thing, and I'm having a hard time getting the doctor to take her off of it.
Well, all I can say is I've seen lots of cases. There's another little thing that occurs, ataxia, A-T-A-X-I-A, and these people have terrible symptoms and so on the statin drugs. And all I can say is that at least if they're taking statin drugs, they must be on a coenzyme Q10 supplement, at least 100 milligrams a day. At the very least, that's what they could do. You still will not avoid the mental side effects.
Okay, anything else, Melanie?
No, thank you.
All right, well, thank you so much for calling. And let's go to Ed, who's calling from Aptos. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Dr. Stan. I hope this isn't too far off the subject. I wonder if down the road in the program, if Mr. Sardi could speak about Hep C, peg interferon, and what some things people with Hep C could do to take care of themselves.
Well, Hep C is what now?
Hepatitis C,
okay.
Yeah, and you know, this isn't too far off the subject in trying to bring up something about the liver here. The liver is where cholesterol is made. The liver is where your hypertension can start, especially in middle-aged males, especially in postmenopausal females, because the liver, when there's iron coming in, stores iron. And that's why we go down to the store and buy liver to eat, because it's rich in iron. Well, the iron accumulates just like a little cash register, adding it up of iron over your lifetime. Men have more, almost twice as much, in their liver as a female because they weren't menstruating and losing it once a month. And so the men have this problem. The postmenopausal women or women with an early hysterectomy have this. Then the fat, cholesterol, in your liver hardens and you end up with high cholesterol. And then, of course, you also end up with hypertension because you have all this iron floating in your system. It's loose iron and it becomes an oxidizing source. So it's very important in middle age for males and females in the postmenopausal is to chelate or remove the excess iron from the liver. I suggest a liver cleanse. Don't go to the health food store and buy the crazy things they have there. Simply get a bottle of IP6 rice bran extract. It's in my report on hypertension, but IP6 rice bran extract. It's simple. You take it with water in the morning for a month or so. Take 2,000 or 3,000 milligrams on an empty stomach, and you'll chelate or remove the excess iron. Your cholesterol will drop. Your blood pressure will go down. Your blood sugar will go down frequently, many times, when doing a liver cleanse. Now, once you've removed the liver, the iron from the liver, if you have any viruses on board, like Hep C, well, that's what they feed off of. They grow off of iron. That's the growth factor. So by removing iron from the liver, you remove, you know, bacteria, viruses, and funguses have a very hard time growing. And, of course, you've taken the guts away of the growth factor from the Hep C virus.
Okay, very good. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest is Bill Sardi. His website is askbillsardi.com. That's askbillsardi.com. And we've been talking about the statin drugs, and it's just amazing the number of people who are on one or another statin drugs today. It's almost Lipitor or some of these others, and yet every one of these has this tendency, potentially, for rhabdomyolysis. This is the dissolution of the muscles. It's not going to happen to everybody, but if it happens, why, you're in real trouble.
Well, it fools you, Dr. Stan. Many of the people I talk to on the phone will call me, and I say, but do you have muscle aches? Oh, yes, but that's arthritis. Oh, yeah? You think it's arthritis. So, you see, you're really having the side effect there, and you don't realize it. So when someone calls me and said I'm on a statin drug and I take glucosamine for my arthritis, it makes me you know, it's a red alert time. It's time to call your doctor immediately. You are having a side effect. And of course, the doctors are not making their patients aware. This is why the FDA has put the bulletin out. Doctors, you must make your patients aware of this side effect and have alert them to the fact that muscle aching and fatigue could be a problem. Of course, you're going to be fatigued on statin cholesterol-lowering drugs. It depletes your body of coenzyme Q10. So do the antihypertensive medications. They do the same thing. And so you're in the same kind of trouble. You could be taking both medications. It's very common for people with high blood pressure to also be on a statin drug for cholesterol. So now you're on, what they show here is that most people that are on antihypertensive drugs need two or three drugs to maintain control. They're also put on a statin drug. They're also often put on an aspirin tablet. Every one of these causes a nutritional deficiency. Many people are on five and six different drugs. Calcium blockers deplete your body of coenzyme Q10. Statin drugs do the same. Diuretics do the same. You've got three drugs in a row. Anti-diabetic drugs, you might be put on one of those, depletes you of coenzyme Q10. You are certainly at risk for a mortal side effect, the rhabdomyolysis, the muscle wasting that we're talking about. So you don't even realize that many of you are taking an aspirin tablet every day that depletes your body of vitamin C, potassium, and folic acid. It's going to raise your homocysteine levels. It cancels the beneficial effect you have out of the aspirin because you're going to raise homocysteine, which is a cardiovascular risk factor in itself. So the same is true for a couple of the other drugs. They raise homocysteine. So the benefits of these are canceled out. And none of these, of course, until they get to magnesium supplementation, lower the risk of sudden death heart attack, because magnesium is a muscle relaxant. Your heart is a giant muscle, and it needs to be prevented from going into spasm. And that's fish oil. And magnesium relaxes an irritable heart muscle and reduces the risk of sudden death. And, of course, this is a way to, of course, control hypertension. Dr. Mildred Seelig, noted worldwide researcher on magnesium, wrote the book The Magnesium Factor, points out that when they did the studies on magnesium supplements to show they were ineffective against hypertension, what they did is they rigged the studies and only did them on normal subjects, people that were healthy, not people that were hypertensive. Magnesium doesn't lower your blood pressure if you're normally healthy. It doesn't do a thing. But if you have hypertension, it does. So they did the studies on normal people who were healthy and said that this mineral didn't work.
And I really, Bill, I've seen enough of the studies through the years to realize that sometimes they rig these studies to show that they don't work because they don't want any competition. Well, let's go to Michael, who's calling from Spokane. Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
How you doing, Dr. Stan?
Question or comment?
Question.
Can you just speak right up?
I'm sorry. I just was wondering. I missed a little bit there. I couldn't quite write down quick enough what Bill was saying about the chelating the iron out of your liver.
You bet. Every middle-aged male ought to do this regardless if you're healthy or not. You have iron overload by the age of 40.
Yep.
And every man has that. Now, you want to prevent you from getting older. Remember, men have twice the diabetes, heart attacks, rates of cancer and infection over a middle-aged woman because they have twice the iron load of a woman, mostly in the liver. So the way you do this is go to any health food store. They should have something called IP6, letter I, letter P as in Paul, 6. It's rice bran extract. Take that every morning just with water or juice on an empty stomach, 2 or 3,000 milligrams for 30 days. You can do it for 60 days. If you want, you will chelate or cleanse your liver of the iron. You will reduce your health risks tremendously in your body. You will take away the calcifications. You will cleanse your kidneys of kidney stones. You will get rid of the gallbladder stones. The calcium and iron, the loose amounts of those will come out of your body. You will lower your cholesterol, your blood sugar, and your hypertension. All of this gets under control once you get iron under control. It's the major factor. So cleanse the liver in middle age. This stuff has been accumulating. When you were growing, you didn't have a problem. You needed iron to go to your red blood cells. Once you were fully grown as a male, age 18 or so, it started to accumulate. By age 40, you've got more than you need. By about 3 to 5,000 milligrams, you've got to get it out of there.
Yep.
So you've got an excess. You want to live long, chelate out the iron periodically. Ladies, if you had an early hysterectomy or go into menopause, you'll soon end up with the same rates of disease as men. You also need to chelate or cleanse your liver. You can do it simply. I have no commercial interest in IP6 rice bran extract. I did write a book about it called The Iron Time Bomb. I went to Japan and introduced that product to the United States, but I have no commercial interest in it. It's for you to use that information to your own health benefit.
All right. Thanks very much, Michael. Let's go to Diane Culling from Aptos. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Dr. Stan.
Hi. Do you have a question?
Yes. Well, first I want to thank the guest for telling me that about aspirin, as I just took one before the show came on. So thank you for the aspirin info. And, yeah, I wanted to know, is there some way to get magnesium in a natural way besides fish oil?
Yeah, you know, magnesium isn't in fish oil. I'm mentioning fish oil with magnesium because they both are good at relaxing
the
irritability of the heart muscle. Now, magnesium is naturally in dark green leafy vegetables. Anything
okay.
That's dark green and in some nuts. But now remember, nuts have a lot of calories. I'm not persuading you away almonds and things, walnuts and things like that.
Okay.
Remember that dark green leafy vegetables, there's not a lot there by weight. So the most you're going to get eating dark green leafy vegetables is a couple of hundred milligrams a day. We're still, even eating that, you're going to need two or three or four hundred more milligrams. So it depends kind of on how much calcium you're intaking. So the supplements play a role.
And taking a supplement?
Right. Now, if you go down to the health food store and you buy magnesium oxide, wouldn't you know it? The health food store is letting us down, too.
Okay.
And the manufacturers. And magnesium oxide is the cheapest form. It'll look attractive to you there. Magnesium oxide, only 4% of it is absorbed, so you get a 400-milligram tablet, and only 16 milligrams of it is absorbed.
Okay.
Don't get the magnesium oxide. And by the way, ladies, when you find the secret of magnesium, all of you ladies still having the menstrual PMS cramping, oh, boy, it's over with. As soon as you find the magnesium, oh, my, that monthly cramping is gone. So you're going to love magnesium. And, boy, if you ever wanted to set up women for anxiety, it's raise their hormone levels and give them calcium. So we're telling them all, drink more milk, get the calcium supplements, and we gave them, of course, the estrogen hormone replacement. And we made all these women, put them in anxiety reactions, and they put them on tranquilizers. Well, of course, all they needed was the magnesium, and they would have been nice and calm. They wouldn't have needed the tranquilizers nor any of this other stuff. So
what do you recommend in magnesium, then? What would I be looking for?
Well, there are any other form of magnesium but the oxide.
Okay.
There's magnesium citrate, magnesium gluconate, magnesium glycinate. These are all names
Which
of the
best.
Types of any kind works. I like
okay.
the magnesium citrate, but they're all
citrate.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, Bill. Well, let's talk a little bit about resveratrol, because I know you've been very interested in that. In fact, you were instrumental in actually getting this released here in this country.
Well,
at least, not released, but at least packaged in such
right.
a way that it's pharmacologically active.
Right. The big thing for all of us, as you read my report on hypertension, so many things to try, so many milligrams of things to take, big pills, thousands of milligrams of this or that, whatever. And it just gets all confusing. Wouldn't it be nice if we could find one thing that we only need a few milligrams, had really virtually no side effect, and we only need one pill a day, and it would solve all these things? Well, this is the French paradox. This is the molecule we find in red wine called resveratrol. By the way, if you run down to the grocery store this week, Women's World has a whole story on this, on the red wine pill. It's the story of the pill that I helped to develop. The pill's called Longevinex. It has a profound effect at controlling blood pressure. How do we know this? Because it makes a little gas called nitric oxide, which just transiently exists in your blood vessels and dilates or widens your blood vessels, controls the blood pressure. Of course, how do we know this? All the men taking Longevinex call up and say, by the way, there's an extra side benefit. It has a Viagra-like effect. You bet it does, because it's widening the blood vessels and improving circulation to all the organs of the body. So this is how it works. It lowers your cholesterol. It raises your good cholesterol. It lowers your blood sugar. I just had a lady here in my home over the weekend who has been a diabetic. She's dieting now, still unable to control her blood sugar at 180 and now on Longevinex at 110. The doctor was so remarked he couldn't believe it. 110 normal blood sugar. on a woman who hasn't been able to do this through diet or medicines at any time. And, of course, we have people reporting to us, a gentleman in Hawaii who's a chemist with an HDL good cholesterol of 94. Men are trying to raise their HDL levels like women have. The women have a little more protection because of the estrogen. Men usually never get a good cholesterol level over 40, and here was this man at 94. Longevinix, it's the pill that will change our lives. It's one pill, and it's going to replace nearly every, virtually every medicine that we want. No, if it lives up to its calling, we won't need blood pressure pills, cholesterol pills, diabetic pills. It's just an amazing development on its own. Longevinix, you can find out about it at longevinix.com. That's LONGEVINEX.com. Or 866-405-4000, 866-405-4000 if you want to order or find out more about Longevinix. And it's a wonderful, it's a red wine pill without the calories, without the alcohol, without the sulfite preservatives of wine. It's just the essence of wine, the red wine, that brought the good health to the French all those years. We now know what makes the French paradox. It's now available to you. It's not costly. It has virtually no side effects that we've been able to record. You just take one pill a day. And, of course, we want to introduce this because it is such a powerful breakthrough for everyone.
And how can people get it, Bill?
And 866-405-4000, or go to the website longevinex.com. And, of course, you can visit my own website. I have some reports there on this, but there's no commercial messages there. At AskBillSardi.com. And, of course, we're trying to give away as much information as we can.
All right, fine. And, Chris, if you if they do get Longevinix, don't they get a book that you've written?
Oh, yes. I forgot the free book offer. I did write a wonderful book in hardback. There's limited editions available, and I can tell you they're going fast. And that's the book is called The Anti-Aging Pill. It's normally a $20 value. You'll get it free when you order Longevinix. It's this whole wonderful story about this wonderful red wine pill and how it's going to change the health and the longevity of all of us in our lifetime.
Well, I think what's so interesting is that actually it's put in a pill under nitrogen, so that it's really
that's
there's
right.
No oxygen
it has to
there.
Be preserved. We just have a new document out showing that we took all the red wine pills called resveratrol on the market and tested them. Only one exhibited biological activity. This is what Harvard Medical School told us. This is what the researchers told us. We did an official study, and it was only Longevinix that exhibited the biological activity. So we're sharing this with the world. This is legitimate research, all backed up by independent laboratories, so it's not a commercial message per se coming to you. It has to be backed up by some independent sources, obviously, or it's not valid. And, of course, we've had 3 or 4 months of experience with this. This pill's been on the marketplace without serious side effects and remarkable results, we have to tell you.
All right, fine. Well, I want to thank you so very much for being with us again. Our guest has been Bill Sardi. His website is AskBillSardi.com. And, of course, you can go to Longevinix. We want to spell that for our listeners.
LONGEVINEX.
Longevinix.com. And so take a look at it. And anyway, Bill, thank you so much for being with us.
You
it's bet. Always
thank
a pleasure.
You for having me.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, fine. That was Bill Sardi, and of course, we always enjoy having Bill with us. He does a tremendous amount of work, and he actually prepares a lot of these reports before he comes onto our programs. But you'll find them posted on his website, AskBillSardi.com. Read them, determine the sources he uses, and he, of course, goes to solid scientific sources. And unfortunately, we're trapped in a system today where, of course, I believe our doctors are doing the best they can, but they're getting their information from the drug companies. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do have some help from some of the people that advertise with us, but primarily we're dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out across America, indeed across the world, 5 hours every weekday, and, of course, our weekend program going to 35 stations by radio and by shortwave, by internet, by satellite. But what a wonderful opportunity in times like this to try to make people aware of the fact that we truly are involved in a spiritual battle being fought between the forces of light and the forces of darkness, between God and Satan. And, of course, this is not an imaginary battle. It's a very, very real battle. If you have not yet seen the video we carry, it's called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. Very professionally done. 4-hour video, and you'll actually see many of the pop stars are talking about how they sold their souls to Lucifer, to the devil. They knew exactly what they were doing, and so many of them have died at very young ages. And you'll hear Marilyn Manson singing songs about Mr. Crowley. Who was Mr. Crowley? Why was Aleister Crowley the Satanist? We have a 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley and his friends, a man who called himself the Beast 666. The most evil man in the world is how he captioned himself. He advocated child sacrifice, and I'm sure he participated in human sacrifice. And we're talking about a man who was prominent, who has followers to this very, very day. You will actually see Timothy Leary, the man who popularized drugs in this company, talking about how what he was doing was carrying on Crowley's ideas. You will hear about how Harry Hay, the man who organized the gay liberation movement, was a follower of Aleister Crowley. How the people who are pushing pornography, followers of Aleister Crowley. Alfred Kinsey, the man who had set out to change the sexual mores of our society, a follower of Aleister Crowley. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll is a video that every American needs to get and to see. And, of course, if you'd like, you can find more about it by giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And you'll want to get the documentation. It's all there on the video and some other videos that we have. Certainly, if you haven't gotten our 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley and his friends, you need to. You need to have my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and or the video by the same name, or the audio tape, or get all of them together as the what we call the the Brotherhood of Darkness special. You need to get our 4-tape set on what's happening to the Christian church. It's called Diaprax in the Church. Or the 4-tape set on the church growth movement, the 4-tape set on the apostate church. What's happening to the music in the churches today? Why have they gone to the bongo drums, the same sort of beat that they use in Africa to conjure up demons? You need to get our 4-tape set on musical madness. You need to get our 4-tape set on, our book on The Crisis in Christian Music by Dr. Jack Wheaton. So the information is there. We just need you to get it and help us disseminate it across America. Now, we hope many of you will go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs on the Internet 5 hours a day, either on Radio Liberty Network, on the Genesis Network, on the American Freedom Network at AmericanNewsNet.com, on the Genesis Network at GCNLive.com. That's the afternoon program. And then the evening program, our shortwave frequencies, 4 hours a day, are listed there, and we're getting a much better shortwave coverage than we have in the past, simply because they're much more powerful, twice as much power, and they are reaching all across America much more efficiently than they did before. So please tell others about our program. Encourage them to listen. Encourage them to go to our website at radioliberty.com. Pull down our newsletters, read them, get the background on what's going on. Understand we truly are engaged in a battle today between God and Satan. And our job is simply to inform others. We can't defeat Satan, but we can speak out for righteousness for our Lord Jesus Christ. And so until tomorrow at the same time, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. We'll be back again tomorrow at the same time. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening Will Thomas. And Will has written a number of fascinating books. One of them is called Bringing the War Home. It's the story of the Gulf War. It's the story of the fact that there's so many of the people who came back from the Gulf War had an illness that infected their wives and their children, and that disease has been turned loose in our society. It's a mycoplasma infection that was actually a part of an experimental program within the vaccines that were utilized on our boys. They simply experiment on our boys. They send them overseas. They really don't care about them. They have no comeback at all. They go to the VA hospital, and they tell them, it's all in your head. We'll give you some Prozac. Well, we have over 200 and somewhere between 230 and 250,000 of those boys, healthy young boys, and some a few women. We sent overseas. They're sick. They're really seriously ill. About 250,000 already have a permanent disability acknowledged by the Veterans Administration. Many more, we have no idea how many more there are out there. And then, of course, at least 10,000 of them have died. You don't die at that age, ordinarily, but they've died. Part of a vast experiment, and they carry on other experiments. Will's written other books, and of course we've talked to him in the past about his book, All Fall Down, going into what really happened on the morning of 9/11, September 11th, 2001. But this evening, we're going to be talking about one of the most incredible stories. It's the story of chemtrails, and Bill has a book on chemtrails. Hopefully it's going to be out very soon. We have a four-tape set on chemtrails. You need to understand what they're doing and what we ourselves must do about this, because this affects everybody in the listening audience tonight. Now, you may not even believe in chemtrails. Will, thank you so much for being with us.
Pleasure to be with you, Dr. Stan.
Tell us, what do you say to people who say, oh, I don't believe that sort of thing. That sounds like black helicopters or conspiracy theory. I mean, they really wouldn't be spraying the atmosphere and contaminating our planet. Our leaders wouldn't do something like that. If that was happening, why Rush Limbaugh would tell us about it, wouldn't he?
I point to my earlier book, Scorched Earth. You mentioned Bringing the War Home, and to documented experiments that the U.S. government and military have carried out on the American people, including 50 years of biowarfare experimentation on Americans in America. Of course, we're all familiar with the atomic testing. Some of it was done upwind of U.S. cities to measure the effects on human beings. The list is quite long. Agent Orange, of course, the adjuvants inserted into the anthrax vaccine during the first Gulf War, resulting in the terrible illnesses you just finished describing. The list is quite long. In fact, governments are capable of anything if they feel it's in their own interest and in the national interest. Too often we're hearing national security as an excuse and a cover-up for crimes against people and the environment.
Now, don't forget about the plutonium studies on the children in the orphanages, the Tuskegee study on the black men.
Yeah.
Don't forget about some of the other studies where they infected children at the Willow Creek orphanage with hepatitis, just to see what was going to happen. And then, of course, the greatest experiment of it all, the hepatitis B vaccine that preceded the AIDS epidemic that's now killed over, well, close to 30 million people, another 40 or 45 million infected. But it was simply, it was an experiment worked pretty well. Well, but, you know, it's so difficult for the average American to believe that. If you haven't yet read the Rockefeller Committee report that came out of the Veterans Administration, we do have that. But then, of course, this subject of chemtrails, I think, is so incredible. What do you say to the person who says, I've never seen a chemtrail?
Maybe you have and did not realize it. One of the major problems with this story and chemtrails is that oftentimes they, one, look like condensation trails, normal contrails from jets, at least at first glance or a casual glance. Most people, of course, we find don't even look up at the sky. I'm a sailor. I've been a former pilot. I'm always watching the sky. Most people don't even raise their heads when you tell them there's something unusual going on just above them. The other problem is that chemtrails spread at night or even during daylight hours. If you don't spot them right away and watch the progression as these things spread out into a milky, murky haze, obscuring an otherwise fine, clear day, if you don't watch the process and come onto it late, so to speak, you are very likely to mistake it for a, quote, normal overcast or another cloudy, hazy day, despite weather reports telling you that it was going to be a blue sky day. So those are some of the factors that people don't know what they're looking at. But on the other side of the coin, Dr. Stan, I've often explained this phenomenon or pointed it out to people, sometimes driving in a car, and they say to you, and I'm sure it's happened to you, oh, I'm glad you told me what was happening. I've wondered what those are. Many people suspect that these aren't right. They're not naturally forming contrails. Nothing that we've seen in a lifetime of living near airports, watching jets fly overhead. So some people see these things. They don't quite know what they are. They don't feel it's right. But again, they don't know what to make of it. So those are some of the problems in identifying chemtrails. Of course, once you see them everywhere. And that is, I must say, also another danger that people sometimes mistake contrails. We get very sensitive to this, and we see chemtrails everywhere. But in fact, if we're watching broad white plumes that do not dissipate within a minute or more often within seconds, we are probably looking at a chemical trail. We can find out for certain if, one, we see an airplane in the same airspace leaving no contrail or a very short contrail next to this lingering white plume, or two, we make a call to the local weather office or the airport, and we inquire as to the temperature and relative humidity at 35,000 feet. This is a good mean altitude for these tanker planes, which have been tracked on radar, and we will know instantly if the temperature is much warmer than minus 40 degrees Fahrenheit, that's the number, minus 40, or if there is less moisture, if the air is drier than 70% humidity. We know from atmospheric science and the scientists who practice it at NASA, NOAA, and the National Climate and Atmospheric Research Center in Boulder, Colorado, they all say that if you don't have minus 40 F, 70% humidity, contrails cannot form. Science says they cannot be contrails, and the only way to make them is to add particulates to the atmosphere.
And I think the thing is that my friends have actually tracked this, have actually seen them crisscrossing. The plane flies one direction, makes a U-turn, and flies back again. Now, if you're going someplace, that's not what you do. And then they come back again and back and forth across the sky. And, of course, people have watched these from, you know, the high-powered binoculars very often describe them as white planes that seems to be not regular commercial planes. They seem to sure they use various types, but some of them feel that these are related to either FEMA or CIA planes, or certainly CIA fronts. Have you ever heard that story?
I've heard that story. In fact, some years ago, I've been on this investigation for 5 years. In the early months, early year, there was a story that Shamrock was one of the outfits apparently flying these planes. Shamrock, of course, a front for the CIA. I have to say very quickly, I could never substantiate that report. We do know that there are some 700 air refueling tankers in the Air Force inventory in the USA. The previous color, Air Force color, was silver, and they have recently moved to a white coloring for their tankers. People are reporting both the white and the silver. But what is very striking in those close-up photographs you mentioned is that none of these planes have windows in the fuselage because they're tankers. They're based on older Boeing 707 and DC-10 airliners, but there's no windows in the fuselage. You've got to be wondering who's buying tickets and airplanes without windows and without any airline markings or the usual bright color scheme we associate with airliners. And, of course, finally, we'll go into this in a bit more detail, but we have actual air traffic control radar confirmation that these are U.S. Air Force tankers.
You know, I've heard from at least three separate sources from government. Two of them were, of course, people who are associated with Jack McLam of Aid and Abet newsletter in the military. Entirely different areas had contacted their superiors, officers, and said, what are these chemtrails? And, of course, a few days later, the report came back from their commanders. And I have this only what I was told by Jack McLam, but on both occasions why they were told, well, I have to check with the Pentagon or somebody of that sort, they're actually vaccinating the American people to protect them from disease that's out there. And the third story time I heard this was the Granada Forum. When I was giving a talk, somebody said that they'd gotten exactly the same story from some government source. Now, I don't believe that for one minute, but obviously somebody's putting out a cover story because they don't want us to know what's going on. Have you heard anything of that sort?
I've heard it anecdotally, Dr. Stantz, from civilian observers on the ground speculating. In my book, Chemtrails Confirmed, the fifth edition is out and is available. We'll give that number in a while. But in my book, I mentioned that, first of all, there are not enough vaccines on planet Earth to fill one of these airplanes, let alone hundreds spraying for 5 years. Secondly, it stands to reason, and I've written on the subject, you do not spray vaccines from 35,000 feet and hope to inoculate anyone effectively. So basically, it's a nonsensical cover story. But what strikes me in your recitation of it is, of course, if I was an American military or a pilot, this is, again, is another feel-good story. We're doing something good for the American people. Now, I'm sure the pilots are told this is for the national interest. It's for national security. I'm also certain they're being told that it has to do with heading off catastrophic climate change, and now many Americans are flocking to see the movie Day After Tomorrow and twigging in that there may be a problem here, even if Hollywood has exaggerated it. So I'm sure the air crews are being told this is for the good of Americans. Certainly the air traffic controllers are being told that this is a climate modification experiment. After all, Dr. Stan, they can see these reflective particles on their radar screen.
Well, have you ever actually seen any of the material that actually precipitated down out of the sky? Because I actually had a young man who worked very closely with us actually brought us some of this one morning that just drifted down. And his tree adjacent to his house looked sort of like a Christmas tree with all of these white strands on it and all the bands. And, you know, and of course, he brought some of this stuff to me for analysis. So have you actually collected some of this material?
I haven't. I have had people send it to me, and I've asked them not to send it through the mail because of the risk, of course, to postal workers. But I have photographs of it, and I base my documentation in Chemtrails Confirmed on confirmed scientific lab tests of chemtrail fallout. Here we're talking rain and snow falling through the chemtrails and collected before they reach the ground in sterile containers. But again, I have not collected this material. I haven't seen it personally, but I have photographs of it on my website, willthomas.net.
Well, we had actually seen it, and we've had it in a paper bag, and we didn't know what to do with it, so eventually we just discarded it, but we've seen the pictures on the trees, and certainly we've seen them spraying, going back and forth. And so there's no question this is going on, but of course, this is totally being ignored by the controlled media, and certainly they're not talking about this, and people who talk about it are sort of relegated to the lunatic fringe, as it were. But I'm firmly convinced it's there, and the only question is, what are they really doing, and what is their potential for this massive aerial spraying program? Because this really goes on all throughout the world, doesn't it?
It does. You know, just a couple of days ago, before the show tonight, I was talking to some friends just back from Japan. In 5 years, I have no confirmed reports out of Japan. These folks were standing by the Imperial Palace last April 22nd or 23rd and noted the chemtrails over the Imperial Palace in Tokyo. And I said, I've lived in Japan. You're near the Narita Airport. Certainly those were normal jet trails. And they insisted, no, they could see the jetliners in the same sky, again, with no contrails. And these were parallel, thick white plumes. So I'm willing to count that as a confirmed chemtrail sighting over Japan. And I have a videotape, a most interesting videotape, sent to me from South Korea, showing unmistakable chemtrails over South Korea. So now Asia's opening up, at least in my investigation, and I have, let me count them now, 13 other countries reporting chemtrails, many of those reports with photographs.
So there's something going on there. It's all around the world. It's not just localized here in the United States. Now, many of the people apparently, do react to this substance. I know a number of people who've told me that, they've had, having real respiratory problems when these sprayings take place. Have you heard that story?
Not only have I heard the stories, and I've got hundreds of them documented, some of them I put in the book, I myself have experienced extreme symptoms. I have to say once again that I do not have scientific medical evidence linking my symptoms to the chemtrails, but as any good doctor will tell a patient when they come in with some strange and very severe symptoms, they'll ask, what has changed in your environment? And on these occasions, I was exposed to heavy chemtrail spraying. I'm talking about sudden vertigo that made me say to the person next to me in a restaurant line outdoors, excuse me, I'm about to fall on my face, don't be alarmed. The whole place was spinning around. I've had joint pain that lasted for months, a twitching left eyelid that nearly drove me nuts that lasted for months, and many of the, fortunately not the gushing nosebleeds. I'm not sure about the short-term memory loss, I can't remember, but many people do report those symptoms, which aren't funny at all, actually. People in Espanola, Ontario, complained about heavy spraying in spring of 1999 before they even heard the word chemtrails or knew any of this was taking place, but they could see it, and everyone in the town, a friend told me, started to forget where they parked their car. Now, one or two people, yes, but everyone in a community, no, there's something neurological going on with these chemtrails and these ultra-tiny particulates. The patent for this, of course, the Hughes patent, outlining the spraying of reflective particles for the reduction of greenhouse warming, calls for particles in the 10 micron size. A hair on our head is 100 microns across, so truly microscopic, and the EPA has warned, and medical studies have backed this up in Britain and the United States, that any air pollutant 10 microns or smaller is an extreme human health hazard.
Because it gets into your lungs, of course.
Not only that, you're right, not only that, it gets into your tissues and can inflame your heart. It can kill you quite dead. And we're not talking toxicity. They were looking at air pollution, coal-fired power plants, and the point was any small particulate can make trouble for your heart, your other tissues, as well as your lungs, and leave you in hospital or worse.
All right. What is the chemical makeup of these chemtrails as far as you've been able to determine?
Well, we have lab tests out of Ontario and last winter in Alberta, confirming aluminum oxide in very high amounts, quartz particulates in Espanola, and barium in Edmonton, Alberta.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment or two here at Radio Liberty, and look forward to your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is Bill Will Thomas, and we're talking about chemtrails. And in just a few minutes, when all of our audiences are back with us, we'll tell you how you can get hold of a copy of Bill's book. This is such vitally important information. People must understand that this is a vast experiment on the American people. And, of course, you say that you actually have patents for this material that was being created to create sort of a dust in the atmosphere that was to be reflective for global warming. Is that what it's about, Will?
That's right. That's the actual title of the patent issued to Hughes Aircraft, now Hughes Aerospace, one of the biggest war-making manufacturers on the planet. Back in the early 90s, Dr. Stan, and we have a link at willthomas.net that will take you directly to this Hughes patent that called for the spraying of a highly reflective aluminum oxide. This is not refined aluminum, not the aluminum linked to Alzheimer's. This is a material about as ubiquitous and inert as sand, that is, unless it gets in your lungs. And that's called for in the Hughes patent, which, by the way, warned that the populace might become extremely angry over the, quote, visual whitening appearance of the sky.
All right, fine. And that was actually in the patent, and you will actually link us to that?
Yes.
All right, fine. And, of course, but what about the pharmacological effect? Does this have a pharmacological effect if it gets in your lungs? It may be inert as far as, pharmacology, but what does it do to your lungs when you get the substance in it?
It's an irritant. These fine particulates come down randomly. This is another problem. Because they're dispersed at altitudes ranging from 18,000 to 37,000 feet, again, radar tracked at those altitudes, these particulates, as you can appreciate, spread over a wide area, but they tend to come down in invisible clumps, so that you could literally be standing 50 feet away from someone and they would not get an exposure where you could get a relatively high dose of these particles and not even know it, at least until you started sneezing or broke out in a rash or gushing nosebleeds and ended up, as so many thousands and thousands of Americans and Canadians and Britishers have on record, ended up in hospital emergency rooms with sudden acute onset asthma or allergic attacks, particularly among people who've never experienced this before in their lives. So there is a definite health risk, as we mentioned, to the small particulates. Medical science backs us up on that. But, you know, I had another theory a couple of years ago working on this problem when I noted that American scientists in the 1980s, sending balloons to check the weather in the upper atmosphere, found on the balloons when they returned to Earth viruses, bacteria, and fungi never before seen on the terrestrial Earth. They were amazed. Now scientists in Europe, in Hawaii, and around the world have recently confirmed that these colonies of bacteria, viruses, and fungi live and breed in the upper atmosphere, leaving people well alone. If they do fall out of the sky, they end up in the oceans, of course, because the planet is over 70%, something like 70% water. So basically not a problem to humans, which is a good thing, because these bugs mutate at high altitudes under intense ultraviolet radiation, so our immune systems cannot recognize or deal with them if they enter our bodies. I speculated at the time.
Hold that thought right there, Bill. We'll be right back.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening is Will Thomas. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And Will has written a book on chemtrails. He's been studying this for 5 years. He's certainly one of our nation's leading experts on this very important subject. Because would our government experiment on the American people? Of course they would. There are wicked and evil people in positions of power. Would they lie to the American people? Of course they would. Then what can we do about it? Well, we can write our congressman, and a congressman is not going to be able to do anything, not until there's enough people out here who are willing to get involved in the process and replace the congressmen and the senators who go along with the system. Will anybody's life or property or family be safe? So, Will, you were talking, of course, that you felt that some of the viruses and bacteria that were actually being precipitated down into our society, these are bacteria and viruses ordinarily we would never come in contact with because they live in the stratosphere, I assume, and now they're being precipitated out on this contrail matter, this this reflective shield that's being sprayed up there in the name of fighting global warming. Is that would be a fair statement?
That's correct as far as it goes. There's one other experiment. And that is, and the Air Force has admitted to this and documented it, and I hope to get that document back up on my website. This is the use of barium, and you remember that barium was found in very high levels in Edmonton, Alberta last winter after a landscape contractor for the city named Dave Dickey noticed that plants were dying and did soil tests and found the electrical conductivity of the soil in Edmonton had gone from a baseline norm of 1 to 4.6 to 7, and he wondered at the time if perhaps there was something in the chemtrails causing the electrical conductivity to jump so markedly, and in fact, lab tests confirmed very high levels of barium. The Air Force, again, confirms they use barium to lay down temporary antennas, as they call them, in the sky, or chemtrail clouds, in order to bounce radar and radio waves over the horizon. They were apparently using chemtrails in Afghanistan during the recent conflict there in order to remotely control the pilotless drones that launched some 40 attacks on unidentified people in the desert. So two programs that we know of, and we know this because, the two scientists actually working on these chemtrail programs at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio spoke to Columbus Alive magazine. Award-winning reporter Bafit Rakus ran the story. They confirmed, yes, chemtrails are real. It's a climate modification project, one and two, also a barium sky antenna project. And this is what surprised me, Dr. Stan. Independently, without prompting, one of the scientists remarked to Bafit Rakus that he was concerned that these chemtrails could be bringing down pathogenic material, the germs we talked about, from the upper atmosphere. So is this deliberate biowarfare against the American people? I don't believe it is. We have no evidence. But is it at least inadvertent germ warfare? Yes, indeed. And, of course, the problem is, since the government knows that this is affecting people's health, sometimes drastically, and have known this for years, and yet continue to do the program, at that point, we cannot say that it is inadvertent.
Well, have you ever heard of anything about titanium in any of these sprayings? We had a young woman named Inka from who had something called Chemtrails 911 her website, and she mentioned titanium. Have you heard anything about that?
I know that titanium was being used. I believe it was shuttle experiments, and even further back than that, there were space-related experiments. I'm afraid I have no other details, just that I've heard that it's used, but not, I have seen no proof in connection with chemtrails. We haven't found it in our samples. That, of course, is an extremely expensive, highly refined material, and given the tonnages of this stuff, it doesn't quite track with me that titanium could be used in any of the amounts. Now, the scientists who ran the studies on this, Dr. Stan, estimated that 10 million tons of chemtrails would have to be sprayed to reduce global warming enough to avert catastrophe. That is to reflect about 1% of incoming sunlight. Titanium would be prohibitive at a fraction of those numbers.
Well, I thought so as well, but I just wanted to check on that. And, of course, there's just so many incredible things going on here. And, of course, there are actually books, government-sponsored books, talking about the spraying of this dust into the atmosphere to control global warming. But we're not going to tell the American people. The American people, of course, wouldn't understand. The elite are out there to look for us. And, of course, if they make a mistake in what they're doing, well, that's just too bad. We'll be back in just a moment here with Will Thomas. Invite your calls, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, I guess this evening, Will Thomas, and we're talking about chemtrails. We're talking about the spraying that is going on all across America, all across the world, and of course, supposedly, this is related to protecting us from global warming. The elite are here. Of course, they're so much smarter than us common folks, and they know what's good for us. They believe in global warming. They believe it's a factor. And of course, by massive spraying of these massive amounts of aluminum and apparently barium into the atmosphere, they are going to protect us from this supposed threat of global warming. But we're not going to tell the people because, well, some of them might be concerned just because they're developing asthma and all the respiratory problems. Well, do we have any idea whether the inhalation of this inert aluminum could lead to fibrosis or other scarring in the lungs over the long period of time with repeated exposure?
You raise a very strong point there. I would have to agree with you based on my own medical writing and research. Again, I don't have medical proof to substantiate that. It certainly stands to reason. I think you raise a very good point there that repeated exposure to this material could be, well, as the EPA says, extremely hazardous to human health.
Okay, we've got Diana calling from Aptos. Hi, Diana. How are you doing?
Well, Dr. Stan, I was hoping to get you before it got dark, because I've been watching, there's a huge one, been laying out in the sky for about 2 hours over Aptos. I've been watching it. I'm sick all the time, and even my dog was diagnosed with severe respiratory disorder.
Well, you know, what's really so frightening, Diana, when you tell people...
they don't believe you until they start looking up, but a lot of people started looking up. And the more you look up, the more you become aware of it.
Well, you know, really, the thing that really is so convincing, if you go to this website, Chemtrails 9/11, and there's links there to this book. And this is a book that's put out by a government agency. And they talk about the aircraft actually spraying dust into the atmosphere to control the global warming. And this is what it is. Well, of course, the dust is not dust. It's aluminum or barium or maybe combinations of both. Will, do you think that they use the two of them together? Or just separately?
We have found both of them in our samples at Edmonton, Alberta last winter, both in very high concentrations. And again, I'll mention that quartz particulates in Ontario was predominated the sample, although aluminum oxide was found in very high levels. All of these are highly reflective materials. All of them can cause extreme distress in human beings and, yes, pets and animals. I have too many stories about sick pets.
My dog is a hacking cough all the time.
Okay, hold that thought just for a moment.
Right.
We'll pull our stations in. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Will Thomas, author of his book on chemtrails. We'll tell you in just a minute how to get it. We have with us on the line Diana from Aptos, and she's saying she's been watching this this plume over her area for the last couple of hours. And, of course, it's not dissipating, is it, Diana?
No, it's not. It's
and, of course, she's
there for 2 hours, thick and heavy in the sky.
Right, and she's had these problems, you know, for respiratory problems. Even her dog is ill, and she attributes it to this. But, you know, we've heard these stories from all across America. One nice thing about doing what we do is people call us from across America, and they tell us about they're seeing exactly the same things, and they're getting the same sort of responses. And then, of course, we go to these government documents that talk about this. Will has a great deal of information. Anything else you want to tell us, Diana?
No, just keep looking up, everybody.
All right. God bless, and thanks
God
so much.
God bless.
Well, Will, have you had a chance to talk to these scientists who admitted to the in this magazine article that they were involved in this whole experiment?
No, I couldn't talk to them, but I did interview Bob Fitrakis after reading the article, and during that interview brought out some of the points I'm mentioning to our listeners tonight. He did check their credentials. This is an award-winning reporter, so I was quite content to go along with his reportage of this. I did call Ken Caldera, though, out at the Lawrence Livermore Lab. Now, Mr. Caldera was in charge of the computer simulations ordered by Dr. Edward Teller, the late Dr. Edward Teller, who was pushing the sunscreen concept, as he called it, during a 1998 international seminar on planetary emergencies, the emergency being the drastic warming of the oceans and atmosphere. Teller, at the time, was pushing for the project. Ken Caldera hoped that the computer study would show that it wasn't feasible. He was opposed to it. Unfortunately, he told me the computer study showed that if enough of the material was spread in the upper atmosphere, reflecting 1% of incoming sunlight, there would be no net warming over 85% of the planet, despite the anticipated doubling of the CO2 greenhouse gas between now and 2050. He also told me that he had no knowledge the program was actually being undertaken, and he assured me that he would know as one of the principal scientists involved, and he also assured me that nobody, certainly from Lawrence Livermore, was working on the project. It's interesting to note in passing that the two scientists at Wright-Patterson in Ohio were from Lawrence Livermore. So apparently Mr. Caldera was out of the loop.
Well, I think that they keep these things pretty tightly under control. The last thing they want is for the American people to know that we're part of a massive experiment. But it's not just the American people. They're experimenting on people all over the world. And if this damages the soil, and they're, of course, it's not producing food. Well, if you read the Global Biodiversity Assessment, they say shortages of food are far better than abundance. Let me repeat that. Shortages of food are far better than abundance. That's the Global Biodiversity Assessment. We actually have a summary of that in my Sustainable Development syllabus. So the people who have an entirely different outlook. Did you say that in Edmonton they're having difficulty raising crops there? This has been sort of a breadbasket of the world, great wheat crops up there. Are they having difficulty raising their wheat?
Well, yes, but only because of drought. This was city landscaping plants that were susceptible. I'm not I'm a gardener, not a farmer, and I imagine that city plants would be more susceptible to this. I can't speak to the wheat, which would of course be grown outside of Edmonton in the surrounding prairie, but we do know that drought, we've had at least 5 years of drought in Alberta, has been a major factor. I'm not claiming that chemtrails are causing the drought, but I prove in the book, I document scientifically that chemtrails do, as any massive particles do, soak up remaining moisture in already dry air, exacerbating drought conditions.
In other words, will it change the weather?
Well, that's a big problem with this. We think, well, gee, if they're doing something about global warming and I can still drive my car, isn't that wonderful? Well, it's not. Ken Caldera has warned publicly that the chemtrail program could destroy the ozone layer. His words, that's a direct quote, and we know that they are certainly messing up regional weather patterns for the simple reason that clouds are a planetary thermostat regulating heat and cold, and when you reflect sunlight or trap hot air between the ground and cloud cover, whether natural or artificial, you change the regional heat balance and you change the weather. People across America have noted repeatedly over the past 5 years chemtrails being sprayed in advance of approaching storm fronts, often triggering violent floods and extreme winds. So there's no question that this is messing up weather, but we're dealing, of course, with a chaotic system, the atmosphere, already hard hit by human influences and natural influences. And to further play with this on a large scale can only lead, as chemtrail theory tells us, to unpredictable cascading consequences.
Well, I'm sure the people who are in charge of this are so much smarter than anybody else. They know exactly what's going to happen, sort of like the people who sent our boys into Iraq to bring democracy. Well, let's go to Judy, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Judy. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Hi, Dr. Stan. Hi, Will. I just want to point out a discrepancy that I'm, you know, there's a lot of discrepancies with this, but one of them that just came up for me is there was an article in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, Pollution Shifting Sierra Rain Patterns, and it talks about how storm clouds gather but don't drop any rain, and the scientists are blaming that on a brown cloud of smog and other pollutants, which will reduce the amount of rain and snow falling on the mountains. Well, they were saying in that textbook that the smog would, you know, decrease global warming. But here in this article, they're saying that the smog is causing the global warming, causing the change in, you know, weather and temperature. And so the fact that they're spraying this stuff out there would, I would say, would be the real cause for these storm clouds to gather and not drop any rain, because it is smog. They said it was, and they showed it in the textbook. So it's a discrepancy there. There's people saying different things.
Well, if they get you confused, then you can't figure out anything that's going on, can you?
I am confused.
How would you respond to what Judy's saying, Will?
There is scientific quandary about cloud cover in particular. The question, of course, does it increase global warming by trapping hot air between the surface of the Earth and the cloud layer? Or does it reflect enough sunlight naturally or artificially to cool the atmosphere? And the long answer appears to be, depends on the altitude of the cloud cover. At higher altitudes, it does cool off the upper atmosphere and theoretically would have a cooling effect on the planet, though I have to say in 5 years, this does not seem to be working.
No, it is.
The temperatures, as we know, are setting records continuously. Both polar caps are melting very rapidly, so it's certainly not working. Now, ozone and pollutants at ground level are going to trap heat and cause you more warming. Cities, of course, are heat islands, as scientists call them, from the pollution they put out. I did get that article sent to me, and I have to confess I haven't read it all the way through, but I'm very interested when anyone mentions particulates and weather, because as I said a moment ago, put enough particulates in the air and you can dry up the available moisture. It will clump around the particles, as the article said, that's true, but if there's not enough moisture, it won't fall. It won't become heavy enough to fall.
Right.
Okay, anything else, Jenny?
Yeah, so that's good. I wanted to bring that up.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you later. And, of course, Will, as long as we've got a moment here before our next caller, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get your book and how they can get your website and then your information?
Thank you. I'm very happy to announce a brand new website. It's a lovely site, works very well. It's willthomas.net. That's Will with two L's, thomas.net. Or you can call this toll-free number for Chemtrails Confirmed or any of my other books and videos. This is an East Coast Business Hours toll-free number, 1-866-470-0740. Once more, 1-866-470-0740. And that was willthomas.net.
Okay, fine. Let's go to Bill calling from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Thank you for doing all your work with Mr. Thomas and others on this subject. It's getting very, very few press, and I really do appreciate the show. I've watched these trails being laid out when I lived in Los Angeles, and unfortunately when I moved to Idaho, the same thing. Seemed like 10 years ago in Los Angeles that the parallel lines that they were laying out were at a lower elevation than they are what I see in Idaho, but it's the same flight patterns every day. Every now and then they'll take a day off or to blow in from the south, and you can always tell the difference. They leave a completely different signature than normal cloud developments. I was wondering if Mr. Thomas had any handle on the history of this, because, like I said, I know they're doing it everywhere, possibly in other countries, and but the ones that I see in Idaho are the same flight patterns that they do almost, I would say, 3 or 4 days of the week at least. And if they don't lay them out, you know, visibly in front of me, I'll see them blow in from the south with the other clouds, but they'll always be at a higher level and have a distinct sort of wispiness to them. That's probably a bad adjective than normal clouds, but they always appear different and, you know, never look like normal clouds.
Are they a little darker than normal clouds, would you say?
The ones that I've seen in Los Angeles and up here always appear to be a white nature, like normal clouds. But they always have kind of a wispy, kind of a spread-out nature about them, sometimes even getting so bad to the point of which it almost leaves a haze.
All right, fine.
And in this,
what are your thoughts on what Bill is saying there, Will?
Yes, well, he's right on. I was brought into this story in the winter of 98 by an international wire service called Environment News Service, and they asked me to check this out. And that was when these trails were so prominent in the sky that people started noticing them as something separate from the contrails they were used to seeing. Now, I have reports and photographs going back years before 98, but we can say that the winter of 98 was the first time, at least in North America, that heavy concentrations appeared enough that people were taking their families out of their homes and pulling their cars over by the side of the road. Now, we also know that since the jet age itself took off in the 1960s, normal condensation trails have become a major pollutant and hazard. The Air Force will tell us contrails are harmless. They are absolutely not harmless to the atmosphere or our well-being. Over heavily trafficked areas in the United States, cloud cover has increased 20% because of contrails. Over the U.S. as a whole and Europe, recent figures I'm quoting here, cloud cover has increased 10%. Again, this is a major upset for the thermostat, if you like, of those areas, as well as for human and animal well-being used to clear blue skies. Now add chemtrails on top of the contrail problem, and we have something scientists are calling global dimming. This is something that scientists have recently discovered in Switzerland, a 3% decrease in sunlight reaching the Earth every decade. Of course, air pollution is a big problem, but the scientists have said, frankly, we're baffled because we factor in all known air pollution and we don't get the amount of global dimming we're seeing. So I am, when I get a moment, going to recommend to them that they look into contrails and chemtrails as part of their global dimming equation. This is very serious. The lights are going out at a time when we're talking about converting, at least in part, to solar energy, and of course we all eat food grown through photosynthesis.
Okay, Bill, anything else you want to say?
No, just a little bit more of an explanation for what I've seen over like 10 years back when I was living in the northern aspect of Los Angeles area. I would have the kids at a pool while they were swimming. I could watch in a period of just a few hours, maybe less than a half a dozen planes lay out almost a complete covering of the sky as the winds at the high altitude dissipated the clouds. The clouds would stay there. They would not be normal contrails, even though on rare occasions I would watch these planes, even through binoculars, start and stop and then start again, which is obviously not a normal thing nor a normal contrail.
I mean, leaving the trail, they didn't start and stop. They stopped laying the trail.
They would fly for a distance, laying it out, and they would stop for a while and then start up again.
Okay.
Usually it's a constant stream. And it's done at such a high altitude, which is higher than normal passenger jets, was a distinction also. But they're so high, it sort of made me feel that it's not something that they're trying to do like they would if there were a type of crop duster.
Okay,
well. The fact that they were spraying, you know, an area where it immediately would come down. These things will float in, you know, following the air pattern, and
okay, fine. Well, thanks very much, Bill.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And, Will, have you ever heard the story that people have seen sort of filaments in the air, almost like spider webs?
Oh, yes. I have photographs on my website, willthomas.net, photographs in my book. Chemtrails confirm the spider webs have made a real impression in some parts of the U.S. I'm thinking about Illinois, Vancouver, Canada, near my location, though I haven't seen them. And those, Dr. Stan, date back to, well, it's not in front of me, but I want to say at least the 1970s in the Gulf of Mexico, and I have that story in the book, where an oil rig worker found oil rigs in the Gulf covered with these strange filaments.
Well, you know, it's so interesting that there was an article in our local newspaper, which, of course, is a Dow Jones newspaper, an extension of the establishment of Wall Street Journal. But, you know, they were saying, oh, yes, this is just spider webs, all these people talking about spider webs. And, of course, this is how spiders travel. They travel on spider webs, and that's why the spider webs are all over. And you stop and think what they're saying. Do they really believe that? Well, I guess they figure that the people are going to believe it, because after all, they've read it in the newspapers. After all, how do spiders travel great distances? Why on spider webs? of course, anyway, it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough, an awful lot of people will believe. Well,
quick answer to that, if I may, Dr. Stan, a very quick answer. A story in my book, a Denver police officer at the Denver airport reported these webs coming down, covered his uniform. He was embarrassed to mention it to his fellow troopers at the office, but he said in his email, it was the middle of winter. I've never heard of spiders laying thousands of 40-foot-long spider webs in the middle of winter.
Right. Let's go to Karen, who's calling from Monterey. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I'd like to ask Will a question.
Go ahead.
Do you think there's a hidden agenda that we haven't discussed tonight, and there would have to be international agreement on some level to allow this to happen, even without the consent of the general populace?
All right, fine. You got the question, Will.
Yes, I understand the question.
Yeah, there's really a two-part question. Number one, is there potential for, is there another agenda? Is there potential for it? And then, of course, what about the international agreements? Because you can't just go flying over, Australia or England without some sort of permission from the governments.
Well, actually, you can through the Open Skies Agreement. This is a couple of decades old now, that allow military overflights with almost no buy or leave. I believe, and we've been told here by airport authorities, that this is a military operation. That is, it's being done between cooperating militaries with a nod from government. I can tell you that people in Canada, where I'm speaking from, are very irate to have American aircraft essentially bombing us with chemicals, just as they're bombing people all over the world, and we would like it to stop. Now, the hidden agenda angle, there's met a lot of speculation on the internet. We don't see a lot of documentation. However, having written on military affairs for over a decade, I can say that it stands to reason that a costly military project such as chemtrails would be, well, a no-brainer, frankly, to tie other projects with it. In other words, if you have a reflectant sunlight program, you might want to tie in your barium sky antenna program at the same time, saving you costs and increasing efficiency. on the darker side, and I'm sure this is what the caller is getting at, there is nothing to say that if you had more nefarious ideas about spreading germs, for example, or simulants, as the phrase goes, that, of course, wouldn't hurt anybody, it would be tempting to tie that into some of the chemtrail flights. I have no proof of this. I've written extensively on biowarfare. Generally, you do not spread these agents from high altitudes where ultraviolet sunlight breaks them down and where rain at ground level further breaks down these agents, and they disperse so widely they're ineffective. I've never heard of biowarfare agents being spread like this, but again, if you wanted to experiment, perhaps enclose them in a polymer sheath to protect them, might look a little bit like spider webs. In fact, you being the military, want to tie this into an existing program. I have no evidence, but we do have plenty of precedent in history for just this type of thing.
Well, we're living in evil times, Garen. All we can do is wait and watch and see. But what we're trying to do, and what I'm sure Will is trying to do, is get hard scientific data. Right now, there's no evidence, but certainly there's potential. God bless. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Good night. Well, Will, we're just about out of time. We're going to have to let you go. I appreciate your being with us. Well, why don't you give out that telephone number just one more time and your website?
Thank you. It is willthomas.net. The toll-free number is 1-866-470-0740.
0740?
That's right. 1-866-470-0740.
Okay, very good. Well, thanks very much for being with us, Will. It's always a pleasure, and we'll look forward to having you again real soon on one of our other programs.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's been a pleasure.
Good night. God bless.
God bless.
Okay, fine. That was Will Thomas, and Will is I've never met Will, but I feel he's a friend, as with so many of the people we talk to here over and over again. Sometimes I talk to them every day, and yet I've never met them, but they're our good friends, and what a wonderful privilege it is to be able to bring their wisdom and their study to you, because I can't study everything. I have a hard time just keeping up with all the various subjects superficially, but what a wonderful privilege to be able to get somebody like Will we've had tonight, or Inca we had the other night. We're going to have Clifford Canicorm on again, and we're going to be talking about the chemtrails, probably, hopefully, within the next week or so again, and then you'll have all of the information, the major information that's available from some of our best researchers. Well, this is the time we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs and believe there's a problem to help us as we reach out 5 hours every weekday, and then on weekends to 35 different stations. And this weekend I'll be doing a program down on KSCO. If you're in the local area here, that's the Saturday special at noon, and we're going to be talking about, the fall of Cuba and the fact that the government actually brought Fidel Castro to power, of this wicked communist, once again creating the best enemy money could buy, and the similarities between what happened in Cuba in 1959 and, of course, what happened in Afghanistan in 1980 and 1990 and right up to the very present time, creating the best enemy that money could buy. And I'm speaking now of Islamic terrorism. So that'll be a fascinating program, but we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. You can join the Radio Liberty family. You can get simply by subscribing to the newsletter if you'd like, or if you'd like a free copy of the newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. To understand the coming elections, you really need to get our 4-tape set on secret societies, because we go into the background of all the elections going back to 1936. You need to get our 4-tape set on the secret government to understand the background of the organizations that control both political parties today. This and so many other information is available through Radio Liberty. We hope you go to our website at radioliberty.com, where you can certainly pull down our newsletters. You can listen directly or indirectly to our programs 5 hours a day. And, of course, you can listen to the archives that are posted there for 6 weeks. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and ministers. But please remember to pray for Radio Liberty. for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, when we'll be with you once again, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.